Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks has been brought to you by More Church Leaders, Stronger Church Leaders. This video toolkit teaches you strategies to identify and support new leaders and build and maintain effective ministry teams. More Church Leaders, Stronger Church Leaders is available on download and DVD at churchleadership.com/shop. How can you connect the dots between where your church needs to be headed and the steps needed to get there? Chris Holmes shares his expertise on using coaching as a strategy to help leaders draw on their own resourcefulness and creativity to move a congregation forward.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I am Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center and your host for this talk. Joining me is Reverend Chris Holmes, the founder of Holmes Coaching Group and the author of The Art of Coaching Clergy. Our focus for this podcast is coaching. Chris, welcome to Leading Ideas Talks. I'm excited to have you join us today and to talk about coaching.
Well, thank you, Doug. I'm thrilled to be here.
I want to begin, Chris. I often think people sometimes aren't quite sure what coaching is. So let's begin with, what is the difference between coaching and mentoring?
Mentoring is a more familiar helping modality to most of us than coaching. And if you're my mentor, I'm coming to you to kind of sit at your feet metaphorically and learn from your experience and your wisdom. There's an innate, it's not just a power differential there, but you are the expert. I'm coming to you because you have expertise in an area that I want. The main difference between that and coaching is that in coaching, we believe that the client is the expert, the coachee. And so it's a different kind of partnering that's more come alongside. It's more equal. And as a coach, what you would do with me then is instead of sharing your experience and your wisdom, as a mentor would, you as a coach, you would be helping me figure out a way forward, asking me questions about some of what I already know, what I need to find out. And it's kind of one way we talk about coaching is an archaeology of the soul. It's a process of partnering with a client to help them dig deep to do the work that they really need and feel called to do.
I really like that phrase, archaeology of the soul, and I want to come back to that in just a minute. But I want to sort of follow up on this idea of what is coaching. We often see images of coaches in football, and right now the NCAA tournament is going on in basketball. And you talked about sort of the coach in this case is not the expert. So how do you help people who sort of have that image of a Bill Belichick, Tom Izzo in their mind when they think of a coach, and how what you're doing is different, but also maybe similar?
You know, I will just acknowledge up front that the label coach, the word coach, doesn't quite fit. I mean, it's an awkward labeling of the work that a coach does, in my opinion, partly because of the connotation it has in athletic application. But, you know, here's the thing. Serena Williams has a coach. most high performance athletes who are reaching their full potential have a coach. And it's not because they don't know what to do. And that coach is not telling them to run 30 laps and drop and give me some push-ups and that kind of relationship. The coach partners with the athlete in the case of Serena Williams, in a way to help them be their best. They're kind of on the sidelines and they become a critical thinking partner, a problem solver with the athlete. So that may be a better kind of image as you bridge the gap between athletic coaching and this kind of coaching.
That was very helpful. And I think the image of Serena Williams is you know, really one that people can relate to, because I think you're absolutely right that a coach in her case isn't teaching her how to play tennis, but the coach is working with her to make sure that she's doing her best as she's playing tennis. So thank you. I think that that image is extremely helpful.
Well, the other modality that most of us are familiar with in the from the helping profession is counseling. And often when, you know, we've reached out for help from somebody else in our life, it's either a counselor or a mentor or a consultant. And the difference between coaching and counseling is that a counselor will likely be probing what's not working well. Where's the brokenness? That's kind of the starting point. And even in you know, therapeutic work, it's to diagnose you as a problem. Right. And we started a whole different place in coaching, which I can talk more about in a moment, which is not a place of brokenness. It's a place of wholeness.
Right. Yeah, I do want to get there. I want to return, though, briefly to this archaeology of the soul. That phrasing, I really like the way you said that. But I want to talk about it in terms of sort of something you've talked about. As you think of this archaeology of the soul and the work you're doing, how is it that you are sort of digging, or I don't know what phrase you want to use, to sort of help a leader to achieve her or his goals, or if it's a group, and we'll talk about that later also, or help a group to achieve their goals. So how are you doing that archaeology work to actually move someone forward?
The work of coaching is becoming fully present to the individual or the group, listening very deeply, helping to becoming a creative thinking partner along the way, asking really good questions from a place not of knowing, but a place of curiosity, and helping the client or the conversation partner think more expansively about their situation, because so often we kind of lock into either or, you know, binary thinking, either I'll do this or this. And for someone to come along and say, well, what's the third option, can lead to, you know, new discoveries. And then to get just a little pushy at the end about, well, what steps are you willing to take? And what I find in my work is that there are a lot of leaders who know what needs to happen. They can envision it, but it's in the realm of a wish or hopeful thinking, aspiration. And what the coaching does is it connects the dots between that wish and the reality of making whatever that is, you know, come into being.
So just to play this out a little bit further, if you were coaching me and I said, hey, Chris, what I really need is to get more people into my congregation. I'm sure you've never heard that one before.
Never heard.
So then from what you've just said, which you would try, and you can sort of play it out with me, what you would try to get me to think about is that the actual question, or would you try to get me to think more deeply about what does that mean?
Yeah, I would. So that's the hope, the wish to have more people in the congregation. But the deeper work to get there is would be asking questions around what's the purpose of your church? Why does it exist? What's attractional about your church? How does discipleship fit into the desire to have more people in the pews? So it's often it feels like kind of subterranean work that we do. We coach not just the thing that the person brings to the conversation to talk about, but we're looking for opportunities to coach just below that surface. And very often that is more questions about the being of the person and not just the doing of the thing that they brought for conversation.
I like that, the difference between the being and the doing, because I think, again, that the challenge that many of us face who work in the congregational setting is we're really focused on doing, like what needs to be done, how can I accomplish this? And it seems to me you're trying to help us take a step back where, of course, you want us to accomplish the doing, but it also requires understanding the being that goes along with the doing. And that's sometimes exactly. what we miss.
Exactly. And I also think that in congregational settings, church leaders for a long time have thought the answers were out there in a book somewhere. Or if I just went to the right, you know, the big church, the right institute or whatever, and learned what they, how they do it, there are my answers. And I think we've kind of matured to a point of realizing that the answers for an individual's congregational context is not out there. It's harder work than finding the answers in a book or somewhere else. And that's where the power of coaching comes in. We, most leaders who are moving from a place of not knowing to a place of knowing can, you know, listen to lectures, podcasts, read books, whatever, to get there. There's another way of getting to a place of knowing, and it's more internal work. I think the Holy Spirit is very active there. And that is like if you're doing a planning retreat and you have never led a planning retreat before, instead of telling you the six easy ways to lead a planning retreat, as a coach, I'm going to ask a question like, what is a time in your life when you've done something new? And what did you learn from that? And what might apply here? So do you get the difference? I'm
yes.
Helping. It's a path of discovery from the inside rather than information from the outside. And the interesting thing about that, the difference between those two is that the retention from reading the articles, you know, to get there is the research says 20 to 40%, only 20 to 40%. Where the retention, if I help you discover the way forward from a place of discovery and knowing, the retention is 60 to 80%, and you're going to own it differently.
Right. So one of the benefits is that I am discovering how to move forward because I'm giving it deeper thought than when when I read an article, even though it might be very informative, the information doesn't stick with me as much because it's not something that I have owned in the same way as if I had to reflect up on it myself.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I think most in congregational settings, the people who've been around for a while who have the answers, the questions being asked right now are the answers we have don't even fit those questions. So we are in a place of discovery, not just because of the pandemic, but because of where the church is and in the world now. We've got to figure out more from the inside what works rather than what kind of worked in the past or worked for somebody else.
Let me shift the dialogue and talk about the differences between coaching individuals and coaching groups. If you're trying to help, but let's start with an individual, which you've talked about a little bit more in depth. But if you're trying to help an individual achieve their goals, it seems like you've sort of laid that out. But if you're coaching a congregation, I mean, what does that look like, or a group in a congregation?
That's much more demanding work, in my opinion, and exciting work, because you've got a lot of dynamics at play when you're coaching an administrative council or a vestry or session in the Presbyterian system. And so what I find in that work is that many of the committees or structures we have in the church that we assume are working, operating as a team, are really operating as groups, silos, without a commitment to the overall goal and the overall mission. And so some of the work around coaching is to work with leaders and their teams to in that transition from becoming individual groups committed to their own agenda to teams that are committed to the overall agenda. So that's some of the work of in congregations where coaching can be helpful. Also in planning processes for, very often it's a coach is brought in to help lead a planning or vision retreat so that the pastoral leadership can be full participants in that rather than in the leader and participant position. Is that getting at your question?
It is, but I'm going to sort of continue down the same vein, because you made in sort of an interesting distinction between groups and teams as it relates to congregations, and that we can have a sort of, we'll call it a leadership committee to be neutral to all denominations. So you can have, yes, a leadership committee that comes together, if I'm hearing you correctly, and that could be a group of individuals, but there's something else that has to take place for them to actually become a team that can actually move the vision forward. I'd like to hear you sort of first, is my reflection correct? And then what is the work that you're doing then to try to help a group to become a team?
So much of the work that I do as a coach is actually training other coaches. And most of the people who go through our training are not, some of them are pastors and they're lay people and they're bishops and not to put out a shingle and become a coach, but to really adopt the mindset of coaching in their leadership approach. So, and in that training, we help a coach with read the system intelligence. I believe that there are, just like there's emotional intelligence understanding individuals and the quality of human interaction between individuals, that's going on within in groups in an organization too, within leadership teams. And so part of the coach's role is to first observe, to be present and observe and listen deeply to and ask themselves questions as they observe, like, where's the energy in this group? Who are the big energy suckers in this group?
Right.
Where are the voices that are not being, that are not present and not being heard? And then to take the risk along the way to either using direct communication or powerful questions to raise some of those issues to a group. The thing about most leadership teams is that they just get together and they do their work. They very often, they infrequently pause to, in an introspective way, to consider and talk about with one another how they do their work together. Like, when are we at our best? When do we struggle? So the role of a coach can sometimes be that kind of to call time out and to say, what's going on here in the team? What are you all noticing about the dynamics right now? And to help the system do its own work. That's different than the coach saying what they see, because the goal here is to help that team do their work of spiritually maturing and working together and moving through the stages to, you know, from forming, storming, norming into performing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's helpful, because I do think that in many congregations, that of course what happens is you are nominated, elected, voluntold that you're going to be in one of these positions, and you're not really thinking about that you're working with others, and that what you all have to do is figure out a way to move the vision forward. So I can see where someone sort of helping you to cohere as a true team in that way would be helpful in terms of the work that you're trying to accomplish. So, So I think that's helpful.
Can I just add one thing? If I could wave a magic wand, I would challenge every pastor and every pastor, someone in pastoral leadership, to hold a training for their elected leaders in the church and call it How to Run a Stellar Meeting. Because I think we set people or lay people up for failure. And because we ask them to do a job, we assume that they have the skills to lead a team or lead a committee, and without equipping them to do that. And, you know, just to give them some basic tools about sending out an agenda ahead of time and starting on time, ending on time, and ending with what are our action steps we've committed to this week. Because, frankly, in the church, we can talk things, you know, to death and return to a month later and talk about it all again. But getting actually to the steps of moving things forward can be really helpful, just to train our leaders to do that.
Thank you. I think I agree with you 100%. And I think if more sort of pastors did that, it would certainly help a lot of the meetings to be much more efficient and to run more smoothly. And I want to shift the conversation a little bit, because you have a philosophy that I think is interesting. And I want you to share, then want to talk about it a little bit. You have a philosophy that each person is whole, resourceful, and creative. And that's sort of your starting place, is my understanding, for helping people in terms of moving forward to reach the goals we just talked about in coaching. Can you share more about how you developed this philosophy and why you think this whole idea of whole, resourceful, and creative is important?
I sure can. And I will say up front, this isn't a philosophy I developed. It's one I adopted whole hog. it is one of the pillars of the coaching profession. The international coaching profession is an international, you know, group and this is really one of the pillars that our starting place is to believe that the persons we are working with have what they need to move forward. And in cases where they don't, it might be helping them find the resources they need to move forward rather than just assuming that I'm that resource.
So let me push a little bit. I agree. I think everybody is probably creative, and prayerfully we all are moving towards a wholeness, and of course resourceful. But is it possible that if you're coaching me as a clergy person, that I may not actually have creativity when it comes to ministry? So what do you do in that situation? It seems to me that that's a huge stumbling block.
Yeah. So if I'm your coach and this is all new to you and you really don't know what you're doing, I would probably coach you to get a mentor.
I like it. The easy way out. Get a mentor. You need help.
Really, it's in any helping profession, you know, part of the art of it is knowing when you can be helpful and when to refer to someone else who can. So there may be times to refer, especially when it's all new. But for most of us, you know, we're trying to figure out a way forward, and it's it's not new. We just need someone to have who can have a confidential conversation, who we can be truly honest with, and who's going to show up and be 100% honest and authentic, and push us where we need to be pushed, and help be a truth teller where truth needs to be told, and help us get moving on the things that that we need to accomplish. So one way to think about wholeness, Doug, is this depends a lot on your theology, but I would encourage folks to think about wholeness from a kind of perspective, a hidden wholeness, that we were all created and God said we were good, and it's a good creation. Now, we don't all live out of that wholeness, you know, every moment of our lives, but that's the basic imprint of my being, is that I am created in God's image and whole. And if I believe that about my client and my conversation partner, my coachee, then we're going to have a very different conversation than if I believe that that person is not whole and resourceful and creative.
Yeah, I think you're right. But let me push just a little bit further.
Sure.
It also seems to me there could be a challenge, as I've been hearing you talk, of culture or ethnicity. So how do you make sure that that there's a good fit? Do you have to have conversations to really get sort of an understanding of where a person is coming from? Because given sort of what you're saying, I could see where there could be some real mismatches that could be frustrating on both ends, and would not help a person or a group to move forward in the way that they would want to.
Yes. So I'm glad you're bringing that up. I think it's really important for anybody in the coaching profession to do their work around cultural appreciation, around cultural awareness. And if I'm the creative conversation partner with somebody who comes from a different cultural background than mine, or even a different place of privilege in society, it's not their work to help me get on board and understand where they're coming from. It's my work ahead of time to adapt and be aware of, so that I do no harm in the conversation. And for some folks, I may not be the best coach, and which is why I have a coaching group with great diversity in the group. I do coach, you know, across gender, across ethnicity, and but I do that with a certain sense of awareness and emotional intelligence, I believe, around what may be appropriate and what may not be. And in cases where I may do harm in a conversation with anyone, I think this is true of all of us, the next right step is to back up and to apologize and to say, how do we need to move forward in this relationship? The only agency I think we have in ministry and any of the helping professions is relationship. And that's sometimes we need to take a step back in relationship and apologize if we've not been helpful, and do everything we can up front ahead of time in terms of our own awareness to be helpful.
Chris, as we get ready to end, I want to sort of return to something you hinted at earlier in terms of thinking of the church universal and where we are currently. So I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you think are the one or two questions, particularly for mainline Protestant congregations, that we are going to have to think or consider as we make this transition coming out of the pandemic? into a post-pandemic world.
So as we come out of the pandemic, there are a lot of voices that I'm hearing say, you know, that there is no return to an old normal, and there's not going to be one new normal, but there's, it seems to me like discovery and openness to God's wily creative spirit that may lead us in some new directions is going to be key. So I think one of the most important things that we can be doing in the church right now is staying wide open, and in some cases, trying to catch up to where God may have already moved beyond the church and into the world, and figure out those places and try to figure out what it looks like to be the church in ways that we probably haven't envisioned before. So I think we're looking at landscape we've never seen before. And it's the way forward then is not a way of knowing from past experience. It's a way of discovering, which I think is pretty deep spiritual work, staying attuned, trying to stay attuned to where God is leading, because there's a huge gravitational pull in congregations to go back to the way we were. And that's not going to be helpful in the time moving forward.
Chris, thank you. That I appreciate the response. And I like the idea of discovery, because I think you're right that those who are curious and willing to sort of participate in discovering where God is leading are the ones that are going to do well as we make this transition. I appreciate the time you spent with us this morning, and wish you well as you continue to work with others to help to bring the best out of them so they can do the work they need to lead congregations.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope it's been helpful, and I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, pastor and author Elizabeth Hagen shares what it takes to be a brave church, one that is willing to tackle tough but important subjects, and a place where people can discuss real life challenges openly and honestly.
I know that brave church is a lot to ask of pastors and of congregations. I think, you know, it is for some bold leadership if a pastor church leader were to take this on and say, I want to be a brave congregation. I know it's a big deal and I know it's a big ask, but I think this moment requires us, us to step up to this challenge and to be brave, because the world needs us to be brave. It needs us to talk about racism. It needs us to talk about mental illness. It needs us to help people feel less alone and less ashamed of what they're dealing with in their life. And to me, it's good news.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.